Welcome back to the Gray Lodge. Today we are going to talk about Season 2, Episode 4 of Twin Peaks, Laura's Secret Diary. And I'm going to tell you right now, it's going to be a very important show. Can't miss this one. This is where I will float. I will lay the foundations for the hidden message of what's going on in Twin Peaks and why this is a very important show. You want to know why so many people are obsessed with it, why it's a cult following? Well, it's because it's tapping into something we all are trying to put a finger on, but we can't quite do it. And that doesn't mean, it's not limited to just fans of the show. It includes the elites and the Illuminati and all these people, right? We'll get there. But yeah, this is Season 2, Episode 4, and it's a real doozy. At first watch, you might not think there's much going on here. I mean, that's very indicative of all of Twin Peaks, isn't it? Let's just get into it. So Leland Palmer, he's now in custody. He makes the fatal mistake of waiving his rights to an attorney, and he talks to the police. Oh, don't do it, Leland. He's questioned about the murder of Jacques Renault. Right? Remember, Jacques got suffocated with a pillow in the hospital by a mysterious gloved man. And Jacoby was able to go through a hypnosis and tell Cooper and Truman who did it. Well, it's Leland Palmer. He eventually admits that he killed Jacques because he assumed Jacques killed his daughter, Laura, merely because he was arrested, which you can see in Truman's reaction that his heart sinks a little bit because he's like, I'm not really sure that Jacques killed Laura. Oops. Oops. Now, Dr. Hayward, he actually has some level of sympathy for Leland because he goes way back, right? Now, everyone in Twin Peaks is a tight-knit community, so he actually feels bad for Leland, and why wouldn't he, right? But Cooper, you know, Cooper's that programmed logic, law and order kind of guy, and he's like, no. He's like, murder is murder, period. No one gets to do it. Andy, Sheriff Andy, Deputy Andy, he wants to get his sperms, plural, his sperms tested again. And he gets caught by Lucy going to the bathroom with a copy of Flesh World to, of course, provide the sample. And she's upset. You know? Because there's this saga, this soapy saga of who impregnated Lucy? Who is her male consort? Who is her BF there? We don't know. She's mad at Andy. She's kind of messing around with this guy, Dick. Here's where it gets interesting. Here's where I'm going to drop a major key alert on you. Truman and Cooper, they're talking about this case. Because if you recall, I think it was in the last episode, Leland tells them, hey, you know that sketch of that long-haired guy? I recognize him. It was a guy named Robertson, and he was my grandfather's neighbor up at Pearl Lakes in the summer home. He used to flick matches at me and say, do you want to play with fire, little boy? So Truman put Hawk on the case. And Truman says, look, the county records showed there was never a person named Robertson living in that home. But the last occupants of the house, they moved to a new home in Kalispell. Now, that's a town in Montana in real life. And if you look up Kalispell on Wikipedia, it says that the name is derived from a Salish language meaning flatland above the lake. And it has nothing to do with the Hindu goddess Kali. But, as you know, I use a bit of the James Shelby Downard method, and we're going to say that maybe it is. And after I tell you all this stuff, you're going to say, yeah, maybe officially the Kalispell does come from that Salish language or whatever, but in the Lynchian world of symbolism and synchronicity and the subconscious, there's something else going on here. And these names are interesting, right? Because if you break apart Kalispell, of course you've got Kali and you've got Spell. Spell, you already know what that means, right? Spell meaning, magical spell, right? And we also heard that, what episode? That's getting very confusing. Alice Tremond, in like the second episode of season two, remember when Donna visited her and she was crying about the creamed corn, and then her grandson had the creamed corn in his hand. And she said, he's practicing magic. Well, magical spells, right? Making changes happen through the spoken word as God created the universe. So you already know what a spell is, but let's talk about Kali. Kali is the name of a demon or goddess, depending on who you're talking to. And these high-level elitist occultist types, they believe that we are currently living in the final age of man, the Kali Yuga, which the Kali Yuga is called so because it's ruled by the demon Kali. It's Kali rules the Kali Yuga, the year of the Kali. And Kali is the 10th and last avatar according to Indian and Tibetan traditions, which, you know, Cooper's very much into Tibet. You find Tibetan references all throughout the show. And they believe that Kali, this last avatar, came from Shambhala to cleanse the world. It's a full circle we're coming to, that it's the final age of man so that we can start over again. Now, if you read from, I always refer people to Dr. Stephen Flowers' Lords of the Left-Hand Path, because to me that seems like the recurring theme of what's going on in our world and our entertainment and the spiritual battle. So I'm going to, look, here's where I'm going to read you from it. And I'm not trying to, this isn't a plot spoiler, I wouldn't say, but without giving away too much of what this Twin Peaks story is ultimately about, there is a deeper concept of a universal spiritual cosmic battle going on. All right? And that includes Kali. That includes the symbolic level. So when I say, when we talk about Kali's spell, which we find out is near Missoula, Montana, which is where David Lynch was born, you could easily argue it away and say, oh, well, I mean, you know, he's just talking about a different town of Montana. Well, maybe. Or maybe, kind of like we talked about with other laws of symbolism and Carl Jung and Freud and archaic remnants, the hero's journey, there's this other idea that maybe he's pulling things from the collective unconscious and presenting them. Maybe Kalispell always had a weird place in his mind and he didn't really know why, and he manifested it onto the screen. Anyway, yeah, I mean, you could argue this all day long. You've got the rationalists out there that would say, oh, no, that's just the name of the town. And then you got, you know, some of the more intense conspiracy theorists that would say, no, it's 100% this. And I don't know. But I do know when you understand what the Lords of the Left-Hand Path is talking about here, you'll say, well, whether or not Lynch knew it, he was pointing us to the solution of what's going on in Twin Peaks. The interpretation, I should say. The interpretation of what's going on in Twin Peaks. He, you know, Lynch always says in his interviews, well, you know, try not to look for too much meaning. There's no one specific meaning and everyone can interpret it differently. No. Fake news. I'm here to tell you there is an interpretation, and I'm here to tell you mine is going to be correct. I say mine. I'm sure someone else has come up with this. I don't have enough time to read all the theories or all the books or all the podcasts on Twin Peaks. There's been a million people who've tread over this before me. I don't know, maybe this is unique and this is something new and revolutionary to the Twin Peaks theory world, but this, what I'm about to tell you, is what's going on in Twin Peaks. So I'm kind of giving you what I think is the ultimate truth of what Twin Peaks is about. Now, is it a plot spoiler? I don't think so. That's why I'm telling you now, because now's a good time to bring it up. If you're very sensitive to plot spoilers, you might want to fast forward about 5 or 10 minutes, because I got to go through some stuff here. But I don't think it's a plot spoiler. I mean, you kind of know there's a battle between good and evil, right? It's every show you've ever seen, right? I'm not going to give away who is what and the roles they play right now. Maybe we'll do that in the big mega conclusion final theory episodes. I don't know. We'll see. Like I said, you're in the Grey Lodge journey with me as I'm writing this book and trying to figure out what's going on in Twin Peaks. And this is the time that I need to bring it up. So here we go. If you read from Lords of the Left-Hand Path, you're going to see a lot of the Twin Peaks references that we need to keep in mind as we progress through the entire show. All right? Now, there's a section of text in there referring to Left-Hand Path Tantra, or the Vamachara. And the occultists who believe the Vamachara is the true tantric path, it's actually the left-hand path, all right? And what we're talking about is a concept called antinomianism, okay? Kind of the rebellious outlook and worldview of life. Whatever, right? You'll understand more what left-hand path means by the end of this. But the book quotes from traditionalism philosopher Julius Evola, whom you probably recognize that name because I've done various episodes and deep dives on traditionalism with Professor Ben Teitelbaum. We had him on the show to talk about his book, War for Eternity. But I've used that philosophy and worldview to discuss the Russian dark arts, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, and how all these people, whether they know it or not, whether they're useful idiots or not, they could be part of the attempted destruction of our world to instill a return to pre-modernity authoritarian world governments. That's what they want. They want The Handmaid's Tale. That's why you see all this dog whistly stuff about, make America great again, and the idea that we're going back, right? Trying to lay in the foundations to, we got to go back. Go back. Go back to what? Well, if you understand traditionalism, you'll understand it's an idea of authoritarianism and a structured place of, I don't want to speak beyond my understandings of it, but anyway, Ben Teitelbaum explains it very well in War for Eternity. But philosopher Julius Evola, René Guénon, they were some of the early proponents, they were the most prominent proponents for this theory of this traditionalism worldview. And the traditionalists, they think that we are currently in the final age of man, the Kali Yuga, which is a phase of history characterized by materialism, egoism, pride, and a lack of interest in spiritual matters. And only by going down the left-hand path of antinomianism can an individual soul be transformed into a divine being. And that's what we're talking about. I'm going to read you from the book. The creative and productive aspect of the cosmic process is signified by the right hand, by the color white, by the two goddesses Uma and Gauri, in whom Shakti appears as Prakashatmika, she who is light and manifestation. The second aspect, that of conversion and return, Exodus, Reditus, is signified by the left hand, by the color black, and by the dark, destructive goddesses Durga and Kali. Thus, according to the Mahakala Tantra, when the left and right hands are in equilibrium, we experience samsara, but when the left-hand path prevails, we find liberation. What they're saying is that there's cosmic processes signified by the light of the right-hand path, signified by the color white, as opposed to the destructive forces of the left-hand path signified by the color black. The black left-hand path is ruled by the demon Kali, which, you know, Kali spell is the name of the location where the most recent neighbors that were the home of that force that were where this Robertson long-haired fire guy was messing with Leland when he was a kid. All right. Also note that there is a reference to a status in Tantra when the we just talked about where the left and the right hands are in equilibrium. They call that samsara. This is symbolized by the circle, popularized by Helena Blavatsky's Theosophy as a concept of reincarnation, death, rebirth, the Ouroboros of the serpent eating its own tail. And samsara is often called the wheel of life. You know, life, death, rebirth. And the Tibetans believe that the way off this karma wheel, this cycle, is to complete what they call the Eightfold Path. And when you do this, you become an enlightened one, or as Blavatsky described it, an integrated ascended master, or as the traditionalists would say, you find liberation through the left-hand path and transform into a divine being. Now, if the left-hand path prevails and dominates, you get liberation. Did you catch that? Liberation. That's a very much the Prometheus tale, the Luciferian tale of being liberated from the false god. And they believe that the demon Kali provides liberation of man to allow man to become God himself. So to sum it all up, here we have the explanation for all the circle symbolism in Twin Peaks, all the donuts. Which makes even more sense because you see the repeated, almost mindless, ritualistic, repeated behavior of coffee and donuts every day. By the police, or even the Double R Diner, I guess, with cherry pie. In fact, you see it in a couple episodes, like Truman shoving donuts in his mouth, mindlessly. And meanwhile, there's these cosmic forces that are at play trying to wake humanity up to get off the wheel to become enlightened gods. You got the two cosmic forces, the demonic black left-hand path and the light white right-hand path. Also, we haven't talked about Pearl Lakes yet. I guess now's the time to do it. But on the show, all you really hear is that Leland grew up taking vacations to Pearl Lakes at his grandfather's vacation home there. And Leland recalls a man who, you know, this Robertson guy who looked like the sketch, who taunted him flicking the matches. And Leland's like, his name was Robertson. But Hawk, you know, he investigates and discovers there's no man named Robertson who ever lived next door to Leland's grandfather. And he found that it was actually owned by school teachers. And Hawk says the most recent residents moved to Kalispell. And we know David Lynch was born in Missoula, which is also where Maddie is from, by the way. And you can hear that Kalispell is near, if you look on the map, it's near Missoula and the Nez Perce National Forest, which is more relevant when you read the book, The Secret History of Twin Peaks. The Nez Perce, which means pierced noses. It's a Native American tribe there. And in the book, you find out Pearl Lakes was significant because some prominent characters got their ashes spread there. The Log Lady has some pretty significant ties to Pearl Lakes as well. And in The Secret History of Twin Peaks, you'll read there's a news article about three children. One of them is Maggie Coulson, a.k.a. the Log Lady. And I think they were in third grade. They got lost in the woods near Pearl Lake. They weren't found until the next morning by the Eagle Scouts and Scout leader Andrew Packard. Yes, the same Andrew Packard that was married to Josie. And the kids, they were found the next morning, and they felt like they were only gone an hour. They were shocked. It was a whole day. A whole night had passed. So there's physicians' intake exams in the book by Dr. Dan Hayward, who was Dr. Will Hayward's father, who started the practice in Twin Peaks there. And it shows that Maggie Coulson, the Log Lady, when she was in third grade, After this event, she had a raised mark on the back of her knee. It was a series of three triangles. That's going to be important later. And the form also says that when the doctor was leaving the room, Maggie said the owl was coming back. And he attributes to, oh, she must have heard an owl all night. But we already know the owls are not what they seem. And her two other classmates had similar markings, Alan Trahern and Carl Rod, who you'll meet in season three at the Fat Trout Trailer Park. So, a lot going on there. Also, while we're at the sheriff's station, Cooper sees that Andy is wearing a pair of boots that Andy says Philip Gerard, the one-armed man, sold him. And he confirms that these are Circle brand, the same as Leo Johnson. So, yet again, there's that symbol of the circle, the samsara. Meanwhile, at the Great Northern, the town is abuzz about a travel writer critic that's coming to town that goes by the name of M.T. Wentz. And also, Jean Renault visits Ben Horn and plays a VHS tape recording of his daughter Audrey bound and gagged at the One-Eyed Jack's. Something curious, you'll see she's wearing a pink sweater in the video, and I got the image on, I'll put it on the Instagram as always. She's wearing a pink sweater in the video, and what's weird is that on Ben's desk, right next to the TV that they're watching it on, you'll see a photo of his daughter Audrey posing sort of by a tree, you know. Apropos, because I was talking about the woods in Twin Peaks. But anyway, she's posing by a tree wearing the same pink sweater. I don't know what the meaning is there. Maybe something else will drop out as we go through the episodes. Surely a play on duality, maybe. I don't know. Like, you know, on the one image, she's bound and gagged and on heroin up at a whorehouse. And the other is just, you know, Ben's daughter posing for senior photos or whatever. Now, Jean, he claims to be the middleman here, saying, like, hey, I'm just here. The kidnappers, they want all this money. I have nothing to do with that, kind of. He's like, but what I do want to do is I want to become a partner with you, and I also want that sum of money to be delivered by Agent Cooper, which we already know. John has a real beef because he thinks Agent Cooper got his brother Jacques killed. So John leaves. Ben has a hissy fit. He throws a chair and he calls up Agent Cooper. So meanwhile, Harold, Smith, and Donna, they're having a drink at his place, of course, because we know he doesn't leave his little home there. And he reveals to her that he's got Laura's diary. Okay. Now, she's like, wait a minute, the police already grabbed Laura's diary. He's like, no, it's a secret diary. And he's like, let's read from it. So, take a list. We're going to get a glimpse of what Laura wrote about in her secret diary, about how she was struggling with these dark passengers. Take a listen.
But still, I'm afraid to tell her of my fantasies and my nightmares. Sometimes she's good at understanding. Other times she just giggles, and I don't have the nerve to ask why things like that are funny to her. So I feel badly again and shut up about it for a long time. I love Donna very much. But sometimes I worry that she wouldn't be around me at all if she knew what my insides were like. Black and dark and soaked with dreams of big, big men in different ways that they might hold me and take me into their control. I'm sorry.
No, don't be. I mean, if that's evidence, shouldn't we give that to the sheriff?
No. I mean, I've read this from cover to cover, Donna, and there are no solutions here. Besides, she gave it to me.
Why?
People come to me and tell me their stories about the world outside. I take their stories and place them in a larger context, a sort of living novel.
Who tells you?
Oh, friends. Lovers.
We hear her insides are black and dark and soaked with dreams of big, big men and different ways they can hold her. She's talking about black and dark, and this draws up a lot of the analogies or metaphors to the scorched engine oil talk when we see these dark forces happening. And then, of course, the, you know, that left-hand path, dark forces of Kali, forces that we talked about. The bigger question, why does Harold Smith have her diary? Well, he implies it's because they were lovers. And he also refuses to give the diary to the police. He insists there's no solutions in here, which I think is a lie, because when you read the secret diary of Laura Palmer, which we'll go over, maybe not. We'll see. Ben tells Cooper, after Cooper shows up, that Audrey's been kidnapped, and he's like, look, you need to drop the money off, $125,000 in cash. Meanwhile, Josie gets back to the Blue Pine Lodge, and Pete tells her Catherine's dead in the sawmill fire. They haven't found her body yet. We get another classic Twin Peaks shot of the swaying trees in the wind. Audrey is, of course, strung out at One-Eyed Jack still. And John implies that he's going to take care of Audrey. Hard to believe, right? This guy's a liar. But he proves it by shooting Emery, the handler, right? He's the Epstein handler guy. I don't know if he's the Epstein handler guy, but he's the handler who works at the Horn department store who gets the young girls up to One-Eyed Jack's to become prostitutes. And John caps him right in front of Audrey, and Audrey's terrified, of course. But he's trying to prove that, hey, I'm going to take care of you. And the reason he shot Emery is because Audrey said that Emery had hit her. But anyways, on his desk, you could see John's also playing with the tarot cards, just like Blackie was. It's a whole occult thing, right next to the heroine of all places. Back to the sheriff's station. Andy and Lucy are still squabbling. Cooper's like, what's the issue here? And Lucy confides into Cooper privately. She says, look, Andy doesn't exercise. He doesn't wash his car. He doesn't wear a sports coat. Dick Tremaine, he offers all these things. He's got lots of coats. You know, classic female fickle attitudes, right? They want what they can't have sometimes. I know this. I went through this lesson as a young man myself. There was a guy who was outdoorsy and had four-wheelers when I was like 17. And my girlfriend was talking to this guy. I said, what? She's like, where's your four-wheelers? I said, what? I got no four-wheelers. I don't even go outside. I'm like Harold Smith. I'm staying inside. Let's see. What else we got here? All right. We get another shot of the moon, something you see throughout many episodes. This time it's half covered. It's a half. These are the occultic phases of the moon. That's what they call it in astronomy. The occultic phases of the moon. This is a half moon. A mystery man shows up to the Double R Diner. Norman and Hank assume it's this mysterious travel writer, M.T. Wentz. At the Double R, Maddie and Donna, they're having a conversation, and Donna reveals that Harold has this secret second diary. Now, the idea presented here is, again, an occulted version of Laura. Maybe that's what the occultic phases of the moon are showing us. I don't know. But the secret diary, it's parallel to the Horn secret sawmill ledgers. Remember Catherine and the Horn brothers? They were debating on which ledger to use? Or maybe the secret knowledge, the secret grimoires or magical spell books or secret alchemical books. I don't know. It draws a lot of parallels to the secret diary idea or the secret half of Laura. You know, she had this duality, these two sides to her. One was dark, 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 as Harold read to you. And the other was the homecoming queen that Bobby fell in love with, Johnny Football Star. Speaking of Bobby, where's Bobby been? We haven't seen Bobby in a while. So Truman, he starts questioning if Josie's involved with burning down the sawmill because she's shady. And she gets pissed, but she finesses him. This guy's thinking with only one head. Josie says, "You think I could burn the mill? My God, how could you think of such terrible things? How could you hurt me so?" She distracts Harry with sexy time. He tears her dress off. Oh, Truman. And you'll notice, I'll put this image on the Instagram too. There's two ducks on the table, one looking each way. And again, we've got this duck symbolism. Remember in the pilot credits, we had the duality ducks. And it's fitting because of the duality of Josie's character, much like Laura. She's got two faces. Also, there's a mysterious Asian man outside in the rain watching through the peeping. He's lurking in the windows there. At the Sheriff's Department, Judge Clinton Sternwood shows up for the trial of Leland Palmer in the murder of Jacques Renault. Interesting name here, Clinton Sternwood. It sounds a lot like Bill Clinton and Sternwood, which is, metaphor for an erected phallus. Now, of course, all this happened years before the public ritual of President Bill Clinton and his own soapy, scandalous affairs. Again, maybe they Lynch tapped into the, I don't know, the subconscious, the collective unconscious. I don't know. Isn't it? I just think it's kind of weird. These two major events from the 90s, of course, Twin Peaks filmed in 90 and 91. Take from that what you will. Dick shows up to give $650 to Lucy to take care of the little problem, meaning he's implying that he wants her to get an abrasion. And she tells him to hit bricks and screams at him because we all hate Dick. I don't like Dick. I don't like his character. He is a dick. She even calls him a dick. Leland's brought before Judge Sternwood. And you can't help but notice there's a chalkboard map drawing of Twin Peaks in the sheriff's office, accurate down to the level, the cross sections of the streets, which, I mean, there's one curiosity here as to why they would chalk up a detailed map. I mean, surely there's printed maps of Twin Peaks at this point in the 90s. Another idea is there's also a vertical dotted line through the peaks of the mountains. What is that? Is that the location of a portal? I don't know. We're also going to find out that Judge Sternwood has a young, attractive law clerk with him. She goes by the name of Sid. Cooper even asked Truman, he's like, "Is that his wife?" Truman's like, "No, that's his law clerk." And Cooper says, "Man, oh man." Because, Lynch, look, I don't, then this is where it gets kind of subjective here. David Lynch seems to be, he's very much into having attractive young ladies around him. And look, I get it. Like, I'm a perv too. Like, I like attractive women too. Now, he shows this in characters in the shows, in his films. In fact, I don't want to plot spoil anything. Anyway, just know that that's a theme for Lynch, right? And who can fault the guy, right? But it does draw almost like it points a spotlight on it here because he says, you got this old judge guy and this young hot chick. and it's almost, I don't think Lynch directed this episode, but he had some kind of creative involvement here. I don't know, just again, something to throw out there. Well, how's it fit into the universe of Twin Peaks? I don't know yet. An Asian man named Mr. Tojimura shows up at the Great Northern. Is this the MT Wentz? I don't know. Josie introduces her cousin Jonathan to Pete. Jonathan was the man lurking in the windows in the rain. And he's here to take Josie back to Hong Kong because Mr. Eckert wants them back. What's going on there? We don't know yet. Jonathan breaks into the Double R that night, does some martial arts on Hank, and they're bleeding. Their thumbs are both cut. Don't ask me how, but they are. and he presses them together and he calls Hank a blood brother, implying that maybe they know each other. There's something going on here with Jonathan and Josie and Hank. We don't know what it is, but we're going to watch the next episode, Season 2, Episode 5, The Orchid's Curse. And we're going to come right back here. We're going to talk about it on the Grey Lodge. Thank you for listening. And until next time, stay woke.